Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on reality behind the news when we come back. Well, the lessons on courtroom strategy and procedure that you hear on this show are just a small part of my two-week basic courtroom strategy and procedures class. And this class includes lessons on what to do and what not to do at the arrest or when you're served with a summons, a citation, or a complaint. And rule number one is don't say anything. Keep your mouth shut and shut up. Now, if you can learn rule one, you can win about 90% of your legal cases. And that's because all of the evidence that's ever going to be used against you is going to be furnished by you. And your government is fully capable of making their own case against you without any help from you whatsoever. So don't give the prosecutor his victory. Make him work for it. Now, listen to what the courts have to say about keeping quiet in the face of police interrogation, or in some cases, police intimidation. The first judge put it this way. He said, who would believe the ironic truth that the cooperative taxpayer fares much worse than the individual who relies upon his constitutional rights? And he said that in U.S. versus Dickerson. The second judge put it this way. He said, you can and you must keep your mouth shut for protection under the Fifth Amendment. He said that in Belknap versus United States. Now, the constitutional privilege was intended to shield the guilty and the imprudent as well as the innocent and the farsighted, said another judge in Marchetti versus United States. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school? It doesn't cost you anything. It's 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. And while you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, and it's informative. Best of all, it's free. Now, our school, Courtroom Strategy and Procedure, is available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org. Click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org, and then go to our archives page. We've been talking about the reality behind the news, and oftentimes we're watching the news channel like PBS, the Evening Business Report, or the Lair News Hour, and we get a lot of fluff. That's what I call it, fluff. They'll tell us Susie comes out on the business report, and she says, O'Reilly is up 3.25, and she'll say, well, General Electric is down 2.125, and Walmart is unchanged. And they're giving you facts. But it doesn't tell us what we need to know. What we need to know is, well, where is the economy headed? Are people buying or not? Is the economy rebounding or not? Should I invest in more plant and equipment? Should I hire another guy? And keep in mind that 65% of all of the people at work in America are working for companies that employ less than 100 people. Can you believe that? That's right. 65% of all of the jobs in the country come from companies that are employing fewer than 100 people in their operation. Little outfits, you know, like, Pizza Hut. You walk into a Pizza Hut and you see four or five girls in there, maybe a couple of guys cooking or something like that. Maybe you're looking at, you know, five, six, seven people working in there. Now, just multiply that out. The guys open, you know, 15, 18 hours a day. They usually open till 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, and then they'll be open again at 6, 7, 8 o'clock in the morning again. And they've got three shifts. They've got two full-time shifts and maybe some part-time guys in there. Now, just multiply that out, seven guys you see, and then seven more for the other shift, and then another four or five, you know, for the third part-time shift. And you've got 20 people working in there. Now, you're driving down the street, and you're looking at all of these fast food shops, you know, Subway and Pizza Hut and so on. And those people are not big employers, you know, like General Electric or Ford with 400,000 employees. Those are just little mom-and-pop operations. Somebody bought a franchise, and they've got this Pizza Hut franchise, and they're employing 20 or 30 people. And now they've got a new bill coming down. It's this health care bill. And the guy really doesn't know whether he should expand his operation, put in, you know, more items in his menu, hire two or three more people in his store or not. And I can sympathize with the guy. I see what's coming down. You don't get that on the business report. But we can get that from the international forecaster. We can get it from the money changer. And I thought I'd give you a report here on what's going on in the European common market, because what's going on around the world in other areas is going to impact upon the United States. You see, we've got the world economy, whether we like it or not, whether it's good for us or not, it's a reality now, and that's the way it is. And our future here in the United States is tied to Europe. Europe's financial future is tied to Asia. The Russians, whether they like it or not, their financial future is tied to Europe and the United States and Asia, just like we are. South America, you people in Brazil, your financial future is tied to the United States, Europe, Russia, China, and Asia, whether you like it or not. And so there's some big events coming down, big events coming down. And we're reading about the fluff in the paper. We're hearing the fluff on TV, but we're not getting the real skin in. So let's take a look at a story here coming out of the forecaster under the title U.S. Markets. And he starts off by saying, well, believe it or not, the Eurozone and European Union crisis is still in the formative stages. The bailout packages arranged for Greece and Ireland are not to bail out those two countries. And the purpose for these bailout plans is to bail out the European banks that lent money to these countries and then bought their bonds when it was imprudent to do so. And these banks knew, because they control the governments, that the public of the solvent governments would bail them out. So the governments of Ireland and Greece, with Portugal and Spain to follow, will be showered with Anglo-American-style bailouts. And as you know, $1 trillion will not be enough to make the banks happy. So $3 trillion is going to be needed. Now, Germany says, no, we are not going to do that. Well, we'll see just who the real masters of Germany are. Such policy flies in the face of German culture. It shows you, though, how close to the edge Europe and its Eurozone really are. Germany understands that, but the rest of Europe, particularly the PIGS countries, are in denial. Now, these PIGS countries, for you people over there that don't follow this acronym, five countries that are insolvent. It's Portugal, Italy, Ireland, Greece, and Spain. And so you take the first letters of their names, like S, Spain is the last one, P, Portugal is the first one, Italy, Ireland, and Greece are in the middle. These countries are in denial. When you look at their balance sheets, you can see that they're insolvent. Now, here's what insolvency is. You know, you've got a job, and you're making payments, and you make the payments on your house, and you're making payments on your car, and so on. And you go out and you work, and you make $1,000, and you spend $900 of it, and you put $100 in the bank every month, and you got $10,000 in the bank. You're solvent. You're meeting your obligations. You got a job, paying your bills. And you can pay your bills as long as the status quo remains out into the future indefinitely. Now, insolvency comes upon us like this. You're making $1,000 a month, but you're spending $1,100. You got $10,000 in the bank. We can look at you, and you're making your payments every month. You made your payments last month, and you're making your payments this month, but you're spending $100 more than you're taking in. So out of your $10,000, you've got $9,900 left. Next month, you'll have $9,800 left. You're not saving anything. You're not making a profit. But you've got enough in reserve that you can pay for quite a few months into the future. You're insolvent, but you're not bankrupt. Now, in the case of Ireland the other day, they were spouting off, we don't need any loans, we're going to make it just fine. That's what they were telling their neighbors. And then one day we woke up and the headline said, Ireland applies to the European Central Bank for a bailout loan. They needed about $100 billion in round numbers. And that's because they were approaching bankruptcy. Now, bankruptcy is where your $10,000 is running out. And we can see that in just a few months, you're paying out $1,100 a month, you're taking in $1,000, and your bank account's down to $300. And we can see that 90 days, you're going to default. Now, this default, this is based upon our legal obligations. The day is coming when we're not going to be able to pay everybody, which is going to get us sued, which means then that we're going to be forced into liquidation of our assets. Now, the people in Iceland just went through that. They went bankrupt. They couldn't pay their bills. They defaulted, and their money went to zero. But they didn't jump in and pay the debts off. The people who loaned them the money, take it in the shorts. Now, the people in Greece have pledged their livelihoods over the next, I don't know, 30, 40 years. In other words, they've signed up for perpetual credit debt serfdom for the next 40 or 50 years, borrowing money to pay off these creditors, the creditors who put them into this position to start with, just like our banks did in this country. Suckered you people into buying into these houses. You couldn't pay for it. Now you went upside down. The banks come into the Congress and say, hey, give us this bailout plan, which we did. Well, that's what's going on over in Europe right now, and it's going to lead to grief, and so we might as well look at the reality behind what we're seeing in the news. The reality hasn't hit us yet. I mean, you know, people are still making their payments, but you need to understand they're insolvent, and they are going to go into bankruptcy. When nations go into bankruptcy, it's a little different than you and I. When we go into bankruptcy, we walk in to a judge, and we say, hey, we can't make our payments, and we need relief from this. And the judge says, okay, well, here's what you can keep, and here's what you got to give up, and we'll settle this off and discharge your obligations. Nations do essentially the same thing. But in this case, what the bankers want is for us to sign up with a new round of payments, payment program, and pledge our labor for the next 40 or 50 years. That's called credit debt serfdom. And the people of Greece have done it. The people of Ireland have now done it. The people of Ireland refused. Excuse me, Iceland. They refused. And the Germans are sitting over here guaranteeing this. See, the Germans and the French and the English and the Americans and so on. And we're also insolvent. To show you how insolvent we Americans are, if you were to take our balance sheet, take a look at the gross domestic product. We make $14 trillion a year. And then you take the amount of money that we're paying out and the amount of money that we owe, that's our debt structure, and you combine these numbers and you come up here at the bottom line and you say, well, what percentage of this? Well, how much is going to these payments and how many years will it take us to pay these payments off with the income that we have? And the answer is we're insolvent. Now, insolvent is insolvent. Insolvent means you cannot pay the debt based upon the agreements that you have already made. That's insolvent. Now, we have to restructure the debt. Somebody has to come in and lend us some money, and then we promise to pay them out of this, that, or something else. We have to give them additional collateral. We have to give them our national parks and, you know, maybe pledge our income, you know, from oil wells in the Gulf of Mexico, or give them a copper mine in Utah or something like that, you know. But something has to be done in order to get back to a place where we can pay our bills based upon what our agreements call for. For instance, if your payments are $500 a month, and you can't pay $500 a month, maybe you can pay $400 a month, but instead of paying $500 for 5 years, maybe we'll pay $400 for 8 years, something on that order. Now, France has also joined the insolvent club. They just did this last month. They were solvent, but now they've slipped into insolvency. They're unable, based upon the debt structure that they're laboring under now, they will be unable to meet their commitments at some time in the future. Spain is insolvent. Portugal is insolvent. Greece, Italy. Now, Germany is not insolvent. They're pretty solvent. They're making money, and not only are they making money, but they're also paying their bills, and they're lending money to these other guys to pay their bills. Now, here's a trap. The Germans are looking at their income and their outgo, and they're solvent and paying their bills, and then their neighbors are coming to them and saying, hey, come help us. Lend us some money. Now, this is your Uncle Barney coming to you saying, hey, lend me some money, because if you don't, I won't be able to make my car payment, and they'll repossess my car. Now, you take a look at Uncle Barney, and then comes Aunt Ruth, and then comes your brother Tom, and you know, pretty soon you can have so many of your relatives coming over borrowing money from you that it'll make you insolvent, and that's what the Germans are concerned about. See, there's countries that are solvent. Denmark is solvent, Sweden is solvent, Germany. You know, generally speaking, the northern European countries are solvent and paying their bills, and the wastrels, you know, that are down here in Club Med, they call it, they're not solvent, they're not paying their bills, or they're not going to pretty shortly. So that's what we're dealing with. Now, we Americans are sitting over here, and our banks have bought a lot of bonds from these European countries, and those banks want to get paid. And they want you and I to take our unemployment checks and bail them out. And I'm sitting here wondering, do we really want to spend our unemployment money bailing out Goldman Sachs and Bank of America? These are some choices that we need to consider here. Now, the International Monetary Fund has its nose under the blanket. It will lend and participate so that it can serve its masters by keeping these wayward states completely in austerity and bondage for the next 50 years, and in that process relieve them of their sovereignty. As all of Europe belatedly understands, one interest rate can never fit all of those countries. Now, we can assure you that the Eurozone is on the edge of collapse. It's just a question of when. Nothing's been contained, nor can it be contained. Like in the United States, the taxpayers of the solvent countries must bail out the banks and other financial institutions of Europe. And the monetary policy created by the European Central Bank and the bankers has failed, past tense. Now, whether this failure was deliberately planned or not, we do not know that as yet, but the truth of that will eventually surface. Currently, the scapegoats are the citizens in these countries, when in fact the real malefactors reside at the European Central Bank and the European parliaments. These same players still do not have solutions other than destroying the Greek and Irish societies in the name of repaying the bankers. So whether we realize it or not, it's been a year since the Odyssey began in Greece. We now have Ireland, and they will be followed by Portugal and Spain, and then Italy. The main battlefield that will decide the outcome will be Spain due to its sheer economic size and its persistent claim that Spanish banks are very solvent, which is symptomatic of total denial. Now, their finance minister's name is Mr. Zapatero, and he tells us the Spanish debt crisis has passed. And our question to Mr. Zapatero is he dumb? Is he naive? Or is he just a liar? Now, how can the finance minister of Italy be so out of touch with reality? He blames Greece and Ireland for the Eurozone's problems as if Spain was a victim of theirs and totally blameless. Mr. Zapatero's leadership is simply idiotic. And then I underlined the word idiotic in the report. This incompetent nincompoop is shepherding his people toward financial disaster and servitude. Their real problem in Spain is the euro, the eurozone, the European Central Bank, and the European Union, and those who have allowed Europe to be led into a financial and economic trap. Germany, the eurozone powerhouse, doesn't want the euro, doesn't want the eurozone, doesn't want the European Union, and has never wanted them. And these institutions have been shoved down the Germans' throats because they lost World War II. This is also why Germany was forced to merge Eastern Germany into Western Germany under such horrible terms and conditions. And the Germans and Germany is sick of being used as a punching bag, and they want out of both. In addition, the cost of staying in the euro is already unacceptable. Any further higher costs could lead to insolvency of currently stable countries such as Germany, Sweden, Finland, Norway, Denmark. Then there are the social issues. Germans expect the other members of the European Union to work just as hard as they do. That has not been the case, and it is never going to be the case. So the Germans no longer want to continue to support these wastrels, and some say the withdrawal from the euro will be too traumatic to contemplate. Well, we say that concerns regarding bankruptcy would be far more painful. And a reflection of that are Germany's recent failed auctions. Buyers buying German central bank bonds are only taking 20% of the offering, and we interpret that as fear that Germany will financially injure itself if it has to continue bailing out these failed eurozone members. Well, just picture this this way. You're doing all right, and you're paying your bills, and you're putting $100 a month in the bank. But Uncle Barney comes over, and Aunt Ruth, and then your brother Tom, and they need to borrow money, or they won't be able to pay their bills, and their cars are going to be repossessed, or their homes. And so you're being put upon to bail out Uncle Barney and Aunt Ruth and your brother Tom. But, you know, there's a limit to how much you have in resources before it drags you down and puts you into insolvency or perhaps even bankruptcy further down the road. You know, so you got to look out for yourself, don't you? Now, European bond markets are beset with the same problems and solutions that the United Kingdom and the United States are. You see, the European Central Bank and the Federal Reserve here in the United States have to remain active in the bond markets, otherwise the bond markets fall. They have to buy persistently, and they have to buy in size. So this week, we saw the biggest drop in bonds and the biggest rise in yields in some time, as the selling grew overwhelmingly. The yield on the 10-year T-bill rose to 3.3% from 2.5%. That was just a month ago. It was 2.5%, and now it's 3.3%. Now, the 30-year fixed-rate mortgage, as a result, rose from 4.3% to 4.7%. And the bond markets cannot function without manipulation from the European Central Bank, the Federal Reserve, and the Bank of England. So needless to say, these interventions are not solutions. They only prolong the inevitable. It would be like you going out and saying, well, okay, I can't support my Uncle Barney, my Aunt Ruth, and my brother Tom, so I'll go out and borrow money and give it to them. Well, okay, you can do that because you've got credit and you're able to pay your bills. But at some point in time, you're not going to be able to support yourself and your family, and Uncle Barney and his family, and Aunt Ruth and her family, and your brother Tom and his family by borrowing more money yourself. You know, there's limits out here. And here's what the reality behind the news is. The reality is, all of us are past our limits. Even the solvent countries are past their limits. They can't borrow anymore. Now that the Germans bailed out the Greeks, and now that the Germans have bailed out the Irish, Spain's next. And when Spain goes into insolvency, and then we have to bail out, you know, Brother Tom. We already took care of Uncle Barney and Aunt Ruth. When Uncle Tom comes in here, now we got to go borrow the money. We're going to put ourselves in insolvency. See where we're headed here? That's the reality behind the news here, boys and girls. Now, when this happens, and it's going to occur, whether we like it or not, it isn't pleasant to contemplate, but that's where reality is. Now, so far, the Gordons are solvent. And now that I'm watching these nations as they're slowly being dragged down into insolvency, I have to ask myself, sitting here in Isabella, Missouri, do I want to be dragged down by the Federal Reserve and Bank of America and the European Common Market, or do I want to divorce myself from all of this insanity and go it alone, just the Gordons by herself? I know it's kind of a wild idea, but I just thought I'd point it out to you. So needless to say, these interventions are not solutions. They're only prolonging the inevitable. The bonds need higher yields to compensate for risk, or the buyers must be convinced that solutions are in hand. Otherwise, in the end, the European Central Bank and the Federal Reserve and the Bank of England are going to end up with all of these government bond issues, which will then lead to collapse. And the sovereign crisis in all of these countries has not yet been solved, nor will it be solved with current policy. Now, once Ireland and Greece leave the euro, Portugal and Spain and perhaps Italy will be forced to follow. And that's going to mean the demise of the euro. So like it or not, that would cause currency controls in each of those countries. Bank withdrawals will be limited, as will be travel outside of each country. And each country making their goods and services inexpensive and competitive with those of the other nations would set currency values very low. And there would be no debt overhang because debt would have been decimated. Bourses would function in a primary fashion. In many ways, Europe would look as it did in the late 40s and the early 50s without the physical destruction. Now, we were there and we experienced it. Recovery would take 5 to 10 years, maybe longer. There will be no Marshall Plan this time because the United States and England will not be any better off. Nations will put new currencies into place and replace their green currency with blue or blue with green. There'll be different colors on the pieces of paper. And the rebuilding of these economies and markets will commence accompanied by tariffs. And the cycle will begin all over again. But this time we'll be starting at zero. And nobody wants to go back to zero. That's what our problem is. So the option presently being pursued is totally unworkable. Perhaps $1 trillion can take care collectively of Greece, Ireland, and Portugal. But an additional $2 trillion will be needed to bail out Spain and Italy. And in the end, the debt load that's being forced on the solvent countries will become unmanageable. And that doesn't even include the political will, which is going to disappear at some point in time. So remember, the Germans, the French, the Dutch, and the Austrians' patience are already close to an end. And at the same time, there would be a major bureaucratic tug of war between those who want their national sovereignty returned and those who would want even more amalgamation, the reason that Europe is in the state that it's in today. So the problem that we face is insoluble. You know, that's the reality of it. You know, boys and girls, when you were making your house payments, making your car payments, and you were going to work every day, and you were solvent, everything was going along fine, wasn't it? And then one day, you lost your job. And the unemployment benefits were not enough, and so you had to give up one of the cars. And then pretty shortly, you had to give up the house. And so now you're renting, and the car that you've got is old and unreliable. I mean, this is the reality that you and I face. Nations face these same problems, just on a bigger scale. And it's always good if you can rely on your brother Tom to give you a helping hand. It's good, you know, if Uncle Barney will give you a hand, or Aunt Ruth. That's what families are for. But what happens when Uncle Barney loses his job and Aunt Ruth is only working part-time? And then, you know, all of a sudden, Aunt Ruth has to take care of her family, and Uncle Barney's got to take care of his family, and your brother Tom has to take care of his family. In the final analysis, you've got to take care of yours. So borrowing from one another might work over the short haul. But the short haul has now been 3 years, and there's no solution in sight. Uncle Barney hasn't gotten a job. Aunt Ruth's part-time employment's the same. Your brother Tommy, he's unable to feed his own family, and you are unemployed. Now, for those of us that aren't unemployed yet, those of us that are still functioning, take a look around us and start making plans because it's coming to a city near you very soon. Halfway time here, boys and girls, I've got to give you a reminder that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package, so be sure to order one by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page and you can download that free general law CD package right there. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour And editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that those authors and publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate by endorsing and recommending the Law Hour and editorial review. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour, they may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine or mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the reality behind the news, and there's a big story here in Europe. Ireland has become insolvent. It's worse than insolvency. They've become bankrupt. So both Greece and Ireland went bankrupt. Now, bankruptcy is something that follows insolvency. Let me run this by you. Insolvent means that you're making $1,000 a month, spending $900. You're putting $100 in the bank every month, and maybe you've got, you know, $3,000 or $4,000 in the bank. That's solvent. Insolvent means that you're making $1,000 a month, but you're spending $1,100, and you've got $3,000 or $4,000 in the bank. Well, you're insolvent, and you're insolvent, not bankrupt. But we can see that if you continue down this road, you're going to become bankrupt. In other words, you're spending more than you're making, and at some point in time, looking down in the future, you're going to get to a point where you cannot service the debt based upon the contracts that you have in force. Bankruptcy is where you default. Bankruptcy is where you get to a point in your financial structure where you owe $1,100 this month and you actually pay $900 of it. $200 of it defaults. Now you haven't fulfilled your contractual obligations, and now the whole amount becomes due and payable, which means that we have to liquidate your assets. That's going to put you out of business. So before that happens, you hope that Uncle Barney or Aunt Ruth is going to come in here and tide you over. And this is what's going on right now. We're in the tiding over period. We got Uncle Barney and Aunt Ruth sending us some money so that we can keep making our payments. We're insolvent, and we're facing bankruptcy, but we need a long-term solution here. So Uncle Barney and Aunt Ruth get together, and they enforce upon you. They say, now you've got to quit spending $1,100 a month, and you've got to cut your expenses down to $900 a month. This is what's causing, in England, for instance, rioting in the streets, because in order to do that, they've got to make more money. And so the British government came to the students and said, we're going to triple your tuition at the university. And so the people are sitting there saying, well, we don't want that. We're going to cut your benefits. We're not going to fill in the potholes and rebuild the bridges, and we're not going to build new freeways, and we're going to raise your gasoline taxes and so on. And this causes hard feelings. And then social unrest takes place. People get mad, and they go out in the streets, and they start breaking windows and burning cars and raising hell, and then the government has to come in with martial law, and you get social disruptions and disorder. And this does not add anything. You know, for instance, when you go bankrupt, you know you're facing bankruptcy. Running around your house breaking out the windows doesn't help you any. Evidently, you know, when people become frustrated, they want to go out into the streets and break windows and burn cars. But let me tell you that breaking the windows out of your house and burning your car in the driveway isn't going to help you any. You know, what you need are some real, earnest, long-term solutions. Now, the people that are running your economies are the banks and the bankers, and they have subscribed to unjust weights and balances. They have violated the Ten Commandments. They violated thou shalt not steal. And they violated you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. They violated you shall not charge interest or usury. And they persuaded all of us to do the same thing. So we've been doing this, and we've been doing it now for about 100 years. And so now, here's the results of it. It was a choice that we made in this country back in 1913. And so here's the results of it. Now, prior to that, we were solvent. Prior to that, we were doing pretty well. We used gold and silver coin. We used just weights and balances. We, you know, for the most part, paid for things and didn't practice usury and interest. And we became the wealthiest, most powerful, prosperous, political, economic, and military country in the world. And we thought that was pretty good. And then somebody said, well, you know, you ought to live the high life and you ought to borrow more money and, you know, work off of somebody else's capital and pay a little usury and interest and leverage this out. And so we did that. And so here's the result. Now, what we're dealing with here is the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto versus the 10 commandments. And we used to practice in this country the 10 commandment model, and then we shifted from the 10 commandment model to the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto model. This is the result that we got. My suggestion would be, let's go back to the 10 commandment model, which gave us the benefits that we all enjoyed back in 1910. I don't think that's going to happen. And I don't think it's going to happen because the switchover is traumatic. It requires deflation and readjustment in our accounts. I think that the bankers and the politicians have a different take. They come to us and they say, follow us. We'll change the color of the money. That'll solve the problem. I don't think changing the color of the money is going to solve this systemic problem. You can try it and see how it works out, but I think you're going to get the same result that the Argentines got, and that was bad. I think you're going to get hyperinflation, and so for those of us that aren't insolvent yet, the rest of the people around us are going to drag us down into insolvency if we stay on this ship. So we need to get off. And so some years back, I got off, and I haven't been dissatisfied with my decision. And I'm just suggesting that the rest of you take a look at the reality now behind the news and ask yourself, do I want to stay on this Keynesian paper fiat currency economy, or do I want to get off and go back to gold and silver, which produced all the wealth that we had back in 1910? So put that one in your pipe and see how that comes out. The assumption of fiscal decisions by the European Union in Brussels regarding fiscal policy will be a fateful decision because it's going to strip each state of its sovereignty. Otherwise, Brussels bureaucrats have made an expensive mess of everything else. Transferring such power under today's circumstances would be a short-sighted mistake, at least in my view. There's no changing the culture and attitude of Portugal, Spain, Italy, Greece, and Southern Europe. They are what they are, and they are going to remain what they are and have been for centuries. They will never have the work ethic of Northern Europe, and thus they will never be competitive. And that's why the Treaty of Versailles, the option, will be met with aggressive noncompliance. That is a forced devaluation internally within the European Union in the form of lower wages. And the goal is to make exports more competitive. This is just another wrinkle in the currency war that will bring about tariffs. This is not ingenious at all. It is transparent, and it is stupid. The cheapening of capital is essentially a devaluation, and that is if they can get away with it, which they cannot. These cuts are too deep and they're too fast. Shock treatment is traumatic and often does not bring the desired results. Overnight, it is expected that Greece and Ireland are going to balance their budgets, have no reason to issue more debt, while the European Central Bank buys the toxic sovereign bonds. So who's going to absorb all of these losses? Well, the taxpayers of all of these Eurozone countries, that's who. And this is exactly what the UK and the US are doing through their central banks. The ECB is just a little late to the party, is all. They're just doing the same thing. Monetizing doesn't work, and the debt purchased is still there to be written off. It's just that the banks aren't going to write it off, the taxpayers are. Deflation has gotten a small foothold in Europe, and unless quickly reversed, this could end up as being irreversible. We don't think so, though. The ECB, that's the European Central Bank, has seen the error of its ways by way of Keynesianism, and they will issue money and credit to meet the challenge and suffer the same inflation that the others will. In the end, monetization destroys all in the name of buying time. Now, the option presently being pursued is totally unworkable. Perhaps $1 trillion can take care collectively of Greece, Ireland, and Portugal. But an additional $2 trillion would have to be used to bail out Spain and Italy. And in the end, the debt load forced on the solvent countries is going to become unmanageable, and that doesn't even include the political will, which could disappear at any time. Remember this, the Germans, the French, the Dutch, the Austrians, their patience is already close to an end, and you see that now in England with rioting in the streets. You saw it in France with rioting in the streets. At the same time, there would be a major bureaucratic tug of war between those who want their national sovereignty returned and those who would want even more of this government control, which is the reason that Europe is in the state of affairs that it is today. So if all of this isn't going to work anyway in the long run, then why do it? Why not do what Iceland has done and restructure your debt, allowing bondholders to share the losses? This, of course, is a form of partial default, and in all probability, it will work. It's also called a managed default, similar to what happened in the early 1970s at the Smithsonian talks at the Plaza Accord in 1985 and the Louvre Pact in 1987. Now, due to the contagion that would be caused by such unilateral policies, such attempts have to be done with all nations participating. That's the only fair way to solve the overall dilemma. There is no nation without guilt, and they have all participated in cheapening their currencies. These nations have created far more debt than they should have, and far more debt than they can pay back. And they've all engaged in excessive creation of money and credit. The notion that Germany, China, and the United States can produce capital to solve the problem in everybody else's backyard is ludicrous. They all have their own problems. And there can be no bailout or the appearance of some savior this time around. Every nation has to bite the bullet and do it simultaneously. And this means that nations have to understand that quantitative easing will have to end and that a deflationary depression has to be accepted and the system has to be purged of its excesses in the creation of capital and of its allocation. Banks and other financial institutions have to accept the blame for what they have done in their quest for excessive profits and power. Now, this approach is the only way to avoid social chaos. Now, after 3 years of recession and depression, the world public is in no mood to play games. They have to be told the truth and what to expect. The blame game can be dealt with later. Either this happens or the world goes down in flames economically and financially. And in the past, when the world economically goes down in flames, war is the result. And the next war will be called World War III. And in the past, we have always used the weapons that were available. And the weapons available today are nuclear weapons. Now, we can't afford more stress tests, which are nothing less than a game of fraud. These bank tests have to account for the risk of sovereign default. Most nations do not want their public or the rest of the world to know that they're financially on the edge of the abyss. The Spanish do not want to admit that they're bankrupt. They are, and everybody can see it. Now, it's true they're making their payments today. They made them last month, they're making them this month, and they're going to make them next month. But we can all see that the amount of money coming in is less than what's going out. And when we look at their reserves, we can see, you know, down the road here, you know, a few more months down the road, they, like the Greeks and the Irish, are not going to be able to make their payments. And then they're going to go to the European Central Bank and they're going to say, well, we need a bailout. And the rest of them are sitting there saying, oh my God, you know, our fortunes are tied to the Spanish, just like they're tied to the Greeks and they're tied to the Irish. And if we don't bail them out, they're going to drag us down. Well, the bottom line is they're going to drag you down anyway. You see, the ship is sinking. The world's economic ship. We bought into the communist philosophy. We bought into usury and interest. Now, our God told us not to do that. And we said, no, we're smarter than you, God, so we're going to do it. Here's the result that we get. Payback. Payback is here. So my conclusion would be, just looking here like I am with Bob Chapman, you know, it's time for us to wake up to reality. You know, the reality is we're broke. Now, I'm not broke, but the people around me are. And so now do I want to bail them out? You know, if there was a possibility that my neighbor over here, if I went over and helped him, could probably get turned around, I wouldn't mind doing that. But boys and girls, I can't bail out all of my neighbors. You know, I might be able to help one of them, but I can't bail them all out. So at some point in time, in medicine, we call this triage. Triage. Here's what happens with triage. Let's suppose you got 50 guys in a company of men, and they go into battle. And out of the 50 guys, 20 of them get wounded. And there they are. Battle's over, and we're standing around here. And we see this guy over here. He's bleeding real bad, so we rush over and we put a tourniquet on him to stop the blood. He's still alive. Now, we take a look at our medics. We got two medics over here, and they got two bags. And in the bags of the two medics, we see that we've got enough medicine and enough tourniquets and enough material here for 10 of the 20 wounded. We can see that. We do not have enough medical supplies for all 20. So we divide the wounded into three groups. There are some of the wounded that if we do absolutely nothing for them, they're going to survive anyway. We're not going to give them any morphine, and they're in pain, and they're hurting. But with or without the morphine, they're going to live. The second group of people over here are those who are going to die anyway. There isn't anything that we can do for them that's going to save them. And if we spend our scarce medical supplies on these five guys who are going to die anyway, then we're wasting the medical supplies on them, because when we get through bandaging and tourniqueting and morphining and getting it all done, they're going to die anyway. But we've got five guys over here that if they had these medical supplies, they could survive. So the medics, you know, they're pretty smart guys. They say, well, we got five guys over here that are going to die anyway, so we're not going to do anything for them, let them die. And then we got five guys over here, 10 guys over here. They can survive without any help whatsoever, and so we'll let them do that. The five guys that could survive, if we give them our medical attention, are the guys we're going to zero in on. When it's all said and done, of the 20 wounded, 15 survive and 5 die. But if we indiscriminately use our medical supplies and we give it to the five guys and the 10 guys, then what's going to happen? The five guys who are going to die anyway are going to die. The five guys that could have been saved are also going to die. And the 10 guys who are going to survive anyway would survive. So we can actually increase the survival rate by 50% by judiciously using rationing. So we're going to ration this out. So whether you're rationing your medical supplies or you're rationing your money, you know, I can't save everybody around me. I might save one or two. You might save one or two. There's some over here that can't be saved. Spain can't be saved. Italy, Greece, Spain, and Portugal can't be saved. and they should be allowed to go bankrupt, wipe out their debt. The countries that can take care of themselves and need no help at all, you know, France, Germany, Austria, Norway, Sweden, Denmark, Finland, should be left alone and take care of themselves. Now, there might be a little help that we could put on for maybe Portugal, or excuse me, not Portugal, but Poland, maybe, or somebody else, and it might help them. Now, you can rest assured that that's not the formula that's being used. Triage rationing is not being used in this economic crisis. The banks want to be bailed out, and they want to be bailed out first, and they want to be bailed out at your expense, and that's what they're doing right now. And if you stay in that game, they're going to drag you right down with them. That's the bottom line. And that's the story that we get here from Bob Chapman, the international forecaster. This is the December 11th, 2010 issue. I want to give credit to where credit's due. This is Bob Chapman. This is the international forecaster, and it's INFOR ECASTER, INTFORECASTER. It's all one word. Internationalforecaster.com. Just that simple. TheInternationalForecaster.com. I suggest a subscription. I usually do that from time to time. I'm just covering some newsworthy articles. The ECB, mark this on your calendar, the ECB, that is the European Central Bank and the European Union, at a point in the future will become a non-entity, just like the United States of America, at some point in the future is going bankrupt. And it's going to change dramatically, and it's going to change your life, and it's going to change mine. That's the reality of this story called Reality Behind the News. Hey, we're out of time here, boys and girls. I've got to give you a final reminder that you have been listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log, schedule, and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. For your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Our time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.